Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Andy Levy, former Fox News and CNN HLN guy and current cable news conscientious objector. I'm a former libertarian who now sits comfortably on the left.
Hi, I'm Danielle Moody, former educator and recovering lobbyist. But today, I'm an unapologetic woke commentator on America's threats to democracy.
And I'm producer Jesse Cannon, and I'm here to make sure things don't go too far off the rails.
We're here to have fun, smart conversations with some of the most knowledgeable and entertaining people in politics, media, and beyond.
Our goal is to try and make sense of our current crazy world, our new abnormal, and hopefully even make you laugh through the tears.
Welcome back to another bonus episode of The New Abnormal, and we thank you so much for being here. Today we're joined by Academy Award, Emmy, and Peabody Award winning filmmakers Andrea Nix Fine and Sean Fine to talk about their latest documentary for A24, The Sixth. But first, let's have some fun.
Are you guys ready to listen to some clips?
Clips!
Clip me!
This podcast has long warned about the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025, and there's good reason. Here we have a Heritage Foundation official who, if I'm being honest, I couldn't find their name, but they say that they are an official from it who's going to take part in staffing Trump's White House, and their plans, well, I don't think they're going to be very popular with the American people.
I work for the Heritage Foundation on their Project 2025, which is in charge of staffing the next administration should Trump win. There are things that have made it, I don't want to say this, but like banning pornography, right? Like that has created such a culture of like hypersexualization in men where they don't want to settle down, where they think they can have a variety, where they, like, if that happened, people would naturally be like, oh, I want this woman. And, you know, like that sort of thing, like, it's probably radical. And people are like, what? This guy's trying to ban porn. You know, it's like, all right, I'm just saying.
Popular stuff.
We do know that all of the top states that have the highest number of viewers for porn are in red states, right? They know that, right?
They might not know it, but as somebody who regularly talks to Pornhub's publicist, she does always remind me of that.
Yeah. They're like in all of the places that I'm assuming are on Mike Johnson's travel itinerary.
Columbia University?
The fact that they think that this is going to play like in a good way for them. Okay, go ahead. Go ban porn. Create more incels. I love this for you.
Yeah, the problem is you ban porn and the incels have no outlet.
Yeah.
No, well, I was going to say something that we cannot put, so I'm going to keep it. I'm going to keep it in my mouth.
That seems to happen on this Sunday show a lot. I don't get why. You know, what they're always saying, Mr. Trump is a populist and he's just doing what the people want. This is another one of those really good examples of what bullshit that is.
Yeah. Also, this is coming from the man that slept with a porn star.
Two.
Cheated on his wife. Multiple. But yes, it's porn is the problem.
All right. Well, as with MAGA goes, the bullshit never ends. And here we have pathetic Senator J.D. Vance of Ohio being nailed pretty hard by Caitlin Collins of CNN for his usual bullshit.
But you can't police people for being anti-Israel or pro-Israel. You can police people for violating the law. And we have seen some of that with some of these protests.
Okay. So you agree that people who break in and vandalize a building should be prosecuted?
Exactly.
Okay, I'm just checking because you did help raise money for people who did so on January 6th, which was, you know, impeding an official proceeding, breaking into a building that they weren't allowed to be in, and vandalizing the Capitol.
Well, Caitlin, I know that this is the obsession of the national media to talk about what happened 2 years ago, 3 years ago on January the 6th.
It's not an obsession. I'm just seeing if it's a double standard.
No, let me answer the question, Caitlin. I mean, look, here's been my basic argument about January the 6th. If you beat up a cop, of course, you deserve to go to prison. If you violated the law, you should suffer the consequences. But there are people who protested on January the 6th who have had the complete weight of the Justice Department thrown at them when, at worst, they're accused of misdemeanors. Now, again, there are people people who are accused of worse offenses, and that's a problem. But you can't have Black Lives Matter protesters who rioted and vandalized goes free when you have people who were actually peacefully protesting on January the 6th who have the book thrown at them. That's the double standard that I'm most worried about.
Yeah, I don't think there's an obsession with January 6th, but it is a legitimate question. And given what you just said there, and as Trump is getting closer to, you know, as he's a presumptive Republican nominee, he has said he would pardon, he's considered a blanket pardon for everyone on January 6th. Are you saying that shouldn't happen? People who beat up cops should be excluded from that?
Well, I think what President Trump has said, and of course he can speak for himself, but I pay attention, pretty close attention to what he says. And you know, I think what the president has said is that people who have this double standard applied to them should be pardoned. And you.
It's amazing that he can speak with his tongue all up in knots like that.
Yeah. I thought you were going to go somewhere else with that.
No. Their hypocrisy and bullshit knows no bounds. Oh, something that happened 3 years ago. You mean for the first time in our nation's history that the Capitol was breached by a bunch of rioters that built a fucking gallows on the steps of the Capitol building and called for the hanging of the Vice President of the United States? You mean those peaceful protesters, the ones that defecated in the halls of our institution? You mean those peaceful? Go fuck yourself. I swear, Jesse, at the end of every week... You know, at the end of every week, you want to do this to me, and I fall for it every time.
Yeah, this was going to be a nice little Sunday,
Then
Jesse Cannon showed up with his clips.
We're about at the ones where we do it the summer where I actually do show up with the nice ones, so
yeah.
I would just say, you know, just give me a few more weeks of torture.
I feel like that never happens. I feel like you always say...
He's always promising a vacation.
Yeah. Really happens.
Well, you know, tight ship around here. All right. Here we have Carrie Lake on Tim Pool's Idiot Fest of a Podcast, where thought goes to die. A lot is made for how Trump never tries to expand his electorate, but here we have Carrie doing what she does best, and oh boy.
You know, Ian's selling his house for $250,000, and you come over from California and you go, I've got a ton of cash, I'm just going to offer you $275,000. Arizonans can't do that. They're trying to, so all the Californians are buying it, the house prices keep going up, 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 and we really need to build a wall between Arizona and California. I'm just joking.
All right.
But we have the Californians come.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm glad she laughed at the joke.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Always sign of a good joke when you laugh at it yourself.
Yeah, and always a sign that you're not an insane person when you have to make it clear that you're joking when you say something insane.
Let's build a wall between California and, okay. Got it.
California might be fine with that, actually.
No, Arizona is pretty blue these days. You could argue, you know.
I'm just joking.
I think if anything, like, you know, Palm Springs wants to steal some of their valor as the place where people go where they have bad allergies. Like, you know, I just keep being told to keep going to Arizona. And I'm like, I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah. No, Arizona is very nice, actually.
All right. So I unfortunately have to do some follow-up here. Last week, we played very disturbing clip from Incel King Nick Fuentes, the white nationalist who had dinner with.
Oh, I thought this was going to be the Laura Trump follow-up.
No. From Nick Fuentes, the white nationalist who had dinner with Donald Trump and has had Paul Gosar and Marjorie Taylor Greene, both sitting congresspeople, at his events. Well, last week I had to put a trigger warning on his domestic violence rant. Well, right after that, we somehow got an even worse clip from him of that. And I have to yet again give a trigger warning because this is pretty horrible. But we have to look at who Trump hangs out with and who will possibly be in his administration since these people keep cropping up.
Totally see myself accidentally killing my wife because I just get mad. You know, we'll be like years into the marriage. I'm going to be like angry about something. It's going to be a little bit too hot in the house. It's going to be one of those days where I haven't slept all night. I haven't eaten in a day. So I'm like in the worst possible mood and she's going to say something and I'm going to just accidentally kill her. I'm just going to hit her and she's going to hit her head on the counter and she's just going to like die. And then it's over, you know. Then people always say, you don't have to get married because you need to dedicate all your time to this. It's like, forget about that. The real problem is I'm going to get married, I'm going to accidentally kill my wife, and then I'm going to be in jail forever. And that's going to be the problem. And then I can never run the movement, you know? She's going to say something. I'm going to lose control. I'm going to blast her. And no, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. These are just jokes. I would never put my hand on anyone. I'm a lover. I don't attack people. But, you know, women do piss me off a lot.
I'm pretty sure that the kidding part was that he would ever get fucking married. And I'm pretty sure that the kidding part is the fact that any woman would come within a fucking 6 feet, 10 feet, whatever protective boundaries are, 100 feet in those restraining orders. Like, disgusting, despicable. Nothing about that was funny. Nothing about that should have been on air. And my God, like, women date these people.
Well, not him.
Well, not him.
Well, not him, you know, but.
Yeah. It's giving Robert Durst to the jigs.
I was going to say, I mean, there are women who write to men in prison who would listen to this and be like, no thanks.
Yeah. Oh, and I have great news. Elon Musk just announced he's letting Nick Fuentes back on Twitter because of course.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, there's something I've really been needing to get off my chest lately, which is that everyone and their mother should listen to the Andre 3000 album because it lifts my spirits on a regular basis, 1000%. We all carry around different problems, big and small. And let's be honest, when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. That's where therapy comes in. It's like this safe space where you can unload all those burdens and start figuring out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
Therapy can make a difference. I know this from firsthand experience. And it's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. It's for anyone who wants to improve their mental well-being. Therapy can help you learn coping skills. It can teach you how to set better boundaries. And it can make you be a better version of yourself.
If you're considering therapy, why not give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, which means it's convenient, flexible, and fits into your schedule seamlessly. Plus, getting started is as easy as filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And the best part? You can switch therapists anytime at no additional charge. So why wait? Take that first step towards a happier, healthier you with BetterHelp.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/thenewabnormal today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/thenewabnormal.
Andrea Nix Fine and Sean Fine are Academy, Emmy, and Peabody Award-winning filmmakers, and their latest documentary, The Sixth, which is absolutely harrowing, will be available to buy on May 3rd, and they join me now. Thanks for being here, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I'm excited to talk about the film with you guys.
So before we get into the film itself, let me start with the most basic question. What made the two of you want to make this documentary? When and why did you decide your next film was going to be about January 6th?
Ironically, we were making a film with A24 about the peaceful transition of power. And that day was supposed to be Trump's last speech, probably. So we thought this would be a good day to film that. We heard some rumblings that something might happen. So we sent a crew down there and we started getting texts from our cinematographer. Look, this is getting crazy. Things are getting crazy. I'm going to follow them. We lost contact with him for a little bit. We were kind of monitoring things from here. There were tweets about pipe bombs. There were tweets about people with weapons. There were, you know, it started to escalate quite quickly. And Washington, D.C. is our home. I'm fourth generation Washingtonians. This is a very personal thing that started happening. And the fear and the, I don't know, it was anger at that time, but just being very upset that our city, this was happening in our city, in our home. The Capitol is not just a monument. This is our home. Washington, D.C. is a place where people live and work every day. And we know people that work at the Capitol. So we were getting quite concerned. And when we got the footage back, we started looking at it and we immediately just said, we need to make a film about this because this is where we live. And then also, to A24's credit, we called them that day, pretty much that evening, and said, we want to pivot. And yeah, they were like, okay, let's do it. We believe in what you guys are saying. So that was mm-hmm. pretty great.
And I think I'd argue that for anyone that lives in DC, this film and Jan 6 hits different in the same yeah. way that 9/11 hits different for people who live in New York or also in the areas where other planes went down, right? It's personal. It affected your life. We're parents, we're filmmakers, we're part of a community. We, you know, it was our kids that we were trying to make sure they were getting, because you just didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think that's also, we're very drawn to telling stories through a personal narrative. And so it made so much sense to us to have it feel very much like, here are people that came to work that day and what happened to them. There's been so much conjecture and everything about even the basic facts of that day. And we really felt strongly committed to making a film that felt very human and bore witness. And it's six people's perspective. And we want as many people to see this as possible. And they can decide how they think about it at the end. I also find it hopeful, actually, because you're so glad that people did their jobs that day. And the hope we find is that they're continuing to do their jobs. And that is part of the story of Jan 6, I think, that needs to be celebrated. And that's the hopeful part, if you can find hope in that.
Andrew and I together have been over 42 countries around the world. And some of our films and some of the places we've filmed them are places where they have coups, are places where, you know, if you're running for president against the president of the country, you can be thrown in jail and accused of being gay and brutalized in jail until the election is done. There are places where you have people on the corners with AK-47s. You come to the airport, people have their tanks at the airport. These are countries that, you know, we go and we film in, and I'm always happy to come home to the United States because, you know, we don't have that. And I feel really lucky that we don't have that and that we have certain freedoms in this country. And we're not this kind of militarily ruled country that's always in fear. And I think that was the other part about January 6th, which was difficult, was, I mean, that day was difficult, but I have to say the inauguration afterwards, I've been to almost every inauguration growing up here, and having the streets gated off, having tanks, having, you know, Humvees with machine guns on them all in the corners, I think that's not what our country is about. I don't think those should be symbols of our country. And I think that that's a very difficult thing. And that's not a symbol of my home. And I don't like that stuff in my home. I don't like my kids seeing it. I don't like it around. So that was very disheartening to see all that.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to get back to something you said. You talked about how the film is sort of, it's centered around these six people who were intimately involved with that day and whom you interview for the film. And it's such a great group that you got because they all have different perspectives of what was going on that day. You have the DC Metropolitan Chief of Police, Robert Conti, and he is talking about tactical stuff and personnel deployments. You've got two of his officers, Daniel Hodges and Christina Laurie, and they were on the ground. They were in and around the Capitol that day. So they're talking about it from the boots on the ground perspective. You've got Mel Cole, who is a photographer who was out there covering the rally and just saw some of the most insane shit imaginable. And you have Congressman Jamie Raskin, who obviously was on the House floor, and Erica Lowe, who was Deputy Communications Director for James Clyburn. And all six of those people, they just give you a different part of what was happening that day. Did you purposely seek out that kind of diversity of perspective, or was it just, you know, it's just a excellent happenstance?
No, I think the chemistry of who tells you the story in any film is critical. And in this one, it especially was. It's really a love letter in some ways to public service.
Yeah.
That was part of it. Every single person is serving the public by what they're trying to do that day. And that was really, really important. We wanted to make sure we had perspectives both inside the building and outside the Capitol. So you're, and then also we wanted to be able to follow the day from 5 a.m. all the way through. So that really starts out on the ground near the Ellipse, people arriving in town, talking about what they're thinking about, you know? And so it's just, how do you sort of build through a perspective? It's like passing the mic amongst many different people is really important. And I think it's also the racial diversity that was in the film is really important to us. I think the issue of race is not talked about in Jan 6 as much as it should. And I think that Mel D. Cole is the photographer that was in the crowd. He's Black. He started came from a hip hop photography. And then when George Floyd was murdered, he decided to turn his lens on more a different kind of things that were going down in this country and started following MAGA rallies. And so he was just fascinated by the why of why these people were coming to this and who they are. And that's what led him there that day. But his idea and his perspective and Erica Lowe's perspective and Chief Conte's perspective, as they're talking about the way the day came together, I think we really wanted to make sure that there was a full diversity of where people were coming from and some of the dynamics that not everyone's thinking about or talking enough about when they talk about Jan 6 or just political tension in this country overall.
There's a really great line towards the end that Mel D. Cole has, and he talks about how when everything was over and he was finally leaving and he got, I forget if it was a cab or an Uber, and he was so relieved that his driver was Black. I don't remember the exact line, but he was basically like, I've had enough of white people for today.
Yep.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And it's probably the only comedic line really in the entire film. And it was great in the premiere screening that we had earlier this week, because the whole house, the whole theater just erupted in a well-needed laugh, you know, and it was very funny. But his perspective is quite, I think, quite piercing and beautiful and really relevant to the telling of the story. And I think a lot of people given us a lot of feedback on how much they appreciated what he had to say in the film.
Sean, I read a comment that you made to the Washington Post a few months ago. You said, this film has probably been harder to get people to be a part of than any film we've worked on. So why was that?
I think for multiple reasons. I think people were traumatized. People were trying to heal. This story was so covered by the press that everybody was trying to interview everyone and get a particular angle on it, that people were just done talking about it. I think also it's polarizing, even within the police department. I think you hear Mike Fanone, you know, the very famous police officer who's in our film as well. He talks about that, when he started talking about this, that people were getting upset with him in the department, fellow officers and things, for talking about it, that officers aren't supposed to talk about stuff like this, supposed to keep it inside. And so I think there was a lot of pressure from different people, but I think it's traumatic. People just didn't want to talk about it. Even Mel, he basically, when I called him, he was like, I don't want to talk about this. And I mean, it took four meetings with him to get him to say, okay. And even when he said, okay, he hadn't looked, the moment we're filming and look at his photographs, he hadn't looked at his photographs since the day. So it was that traumatic that he didn't want to look back through his photos. And then he did when he was editing some when we were filming him. So that was hard. We had one police officer who was scheduled for an interview who just didn't show up.
Huh.
I don't blame them. It's just so traumatic. Even Erica was very, you know, difficult for her, you know, to say yes. I didn't even know this till our screening the other day, where she said, you know, I wasn't sure if I want to do this, but the Fines promised me that they would tell this story the right way. And so I trusted, I thought it was time, you know, no one in her office would talk in that photo. And finally she decided to, and she said, I'm so glad I did, because it was handled, because it was about my story. And I think that's the hard part, is people were really worried about us being able to retell really their story and their voice and not some other narrative. And it's just also, it's super traumatic. I mean, it's so hard to relive. I mean, I can't tell you the amount of people that were at Jan 6 that were at our screening, that were crying, that were shaking, just because it's a really, it's a really horrible event.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's clear, you know, just from watching the movie that if not all six, a good number of them are very clearly suffering from PTSD. And, you know, you had Erica Lowe saying when footage of that day is played, I change the channel, and that she tries the best she can to block that day out. And you have Officer Hodges saying when he sees footage from that day, it makes his heart race and he can feel his blood pressure shoot up. And I was, as he's saying that, I'm sitting here going, it's making me feel like that. And obviously, I wasn't there. My life wasn't in danger. I cannot even imagine the extent to which he and the others are feeling this every time they think about it.
Yeah, I think it was part of our goal was to, I mean, we're emotional filmmakers. I think the facts are great. All our films are always factual. You learn things all the time. But I think we also really like when people share their emotions with us and how they're feeling at those moments. So I think that was really important. And it was really important for us to try to capture, after talking to these people on the phone and stuff, try to capture really and make you feel what they were going through that day, whether it was Erica locked behind a door and people are banging and she doesn't know what's going to happen, or it's Hodges trapped in a doorway with like all these people screaming at him and ripping his mask off, like to really viscerally feel what it's like to be right next to them, I think was our goal from the get-go. I mean, this is a, everybody says in the film, it was like an action movie, you know, and Mel says that. I got up there, I was like, fuck, this is like an action movie. What the hell's happening? But it was like, if you're a director, like you couldn't write a more intense action movie probably with all these different perspectives of people, you know, from all over. And I think that that was something that was really interesting. And I think, you know, I want to clarify, like when I said facts are great, I don't mean that we're not factual films. So I think this was exhausting. Research. And that's one thing that we give a shout out to our edit team all the time on this is one is that it feels like you're there and it's done with a lot of different camera angles and footage that was, we didn't pay any insurrectionists for any footage. It was all footage that was sourced fair use. And then the other part is that factually it's just all correct. Every sound you hear, every frame you hear is of that time, of that second. So, you know, nobody's taking things out of context to make them more violent or make it feel more intense, you know, intense or emotional. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something we're really proud of. And then we're really proud of also like digging into some of the facts that weren't found that day. And that's really Andrea that really dug into this, especially that one about the National Guard.
And to pick up on something that Sean was saying is like the emotional side and the human side. I think January 6th suffers from a subject that people tend to categorize and put into party and put into what like side of the agenda you're on. And that colors the way people have empathy for what happened. And that's really what we're trying to break through, that this was a really traumatic moment for the humans involved. So yes, you understand that Erica is a congressional staffer and it works in Clyburn's office. But what you also understand is that her mom has Alzheimer's and she's the primary caretaker. And what's going to happen to her mom if she doesn't come home? And Melody Cole is a father and he has a little toddler at home waiting for him, and that he's going to wonder how would he feel if something happened to him that day? And, you know, again and again,
Jamie, who just lost his son. Yeah. Is worried about losing his other child, you know, like doesn't know where she is separated, like is terrified about this. These are all, it's like interesting when I think about it. Could you imagine this happening at like someone's place of work? Like, let's say this happened at FedEx or this happened at like, you know, I don't know, a big business or corporation. I mean, you know, that's what we're trying to say is like this, these people are just going to do their job. Right. Yes, they were in the government, they're serving, but they're just going to do their job that day. They didn't prep for this. They didn't expect it. In fact, Erica was really looking forward to it.
Absolutely. And as you intimated, you know, Jamie Raskin brought his youngest daughter and his son-in-law, who is married to another daughter, with him that day. And so he, as you say, spends the whole time, you know, worried sick that something bad is going to happen to them.
That's what I mean about being in other countries and things. I mean, can you imagine, like, is our country going to go towards a direction where every time someone's elected or something happens and we're a country where you can bring your kid to work. You can bring your kid to the Capitol. I used to go to the Capitol as a kid all the time. Like, imagine, like, you can't do that anymore. You have to have bodyguards when you go there. You have to wear vests and things. I mean, what kind of country are we if that happens?
Yeah, absolutely. I kept thinking when it, you know, after the movie was over, I kept thinking how shitty it is that the cathartic moment in the film is when more cops show up, many from other states, and start firing smoke and tear gas into the crowd and pushing them back from the Capitol building. And obviously, I don't mean it was shitty in the sense of your filmmaking. I mean that sort of given the history of the police in this country, I sort of, you don't want to feel good about watching cops do that. But in this case, I was like, I was sitting there going, fucking finally.
Yeah.
I think the part of this story that I don't think people truly understood, we didn't, and we live here, was that when we started researching exhaustively, minute by minute, what happened, at what point certain forces came into being, and also interviewing our characters so closely, it became incredibly clear that had the Metropolitan Police Department of DC not stepped in the way they did, I think we would have had a very different outcome that day. I think that the tunnel in which they were bracing themselves, where Officer Hodges had that horrible thing happen, and Crystalina Lorie is bear-maced, and like all those things, those officers were brutally beaten and dragged out of the crowd for hours. None of that had the contingent of people that were outside that tunnel, which are the really militarized faction that had a lot of weaponry and bad things about it. Had they been able to get through that tunnel, I think, and get to the people inside, to get to the people serving government inside, I think you would have had a very scary outcome, even worse than what happened that day. And I think that the National Guard was not what saved the Capitol that day. It was local. Mainly local law enforcement, and also local law enforcement for other states that came in that did that. And it literally saved our democracy. And I don't think people understand that. I think our film pushes that out there in a very clear way. And we wanted it to become clear. I think
men and women that aren't trained to fight for hours and hours on end. You know, it was interesting. Chief Conte says it to us, and he says it in the film, that like we're trained to arrest someone in 5 minutes, right, maybe 10 minutes. We're not trained to fight for hours. They're not trained for hand-to-hand combat. For it's like military.
Absolutely.
Stuff. And they sat there and they did it. And even Hodges, after he got hurt, you know, concussed and brutally hit in the head with a nightstick, he put his helmet back on and he went back out. And so that's the kind of people that were there, and that really kept other people from getting hurt, and actually kind of saved our democracy.
You know, that was the bright spot in a film that, as I was telling you before we started recording, there were a lot of times during the movie when I found myself feeling very murderous. But it was always, you know, thank God that there were people there who were willing to stand up and at harm to themselves, physical and mental, were willing to fight back. And, I just want to say before we leave, this film, I think, should be required viewing in every high school in America. I think it is so important, particularly as we get further away from the day and we see this getting spun by people like Donald Trump and others as something other than it was, and that somehow these rioters, traitors, were somehow heroes. This film, it does such a great job of just dispelling any notion that that has even the slightest relation to the truth. And so I thank you both, Andrea Nix Fine and Sean Fine, for making this film. And the film is The Sixth. It is available to buy on May 3rd. I could not encourage people to watch this more. It is so riveting and just so well done. Thank you both.
Thanks so much. We really appreciate it, Mitch.
Hope you enjoy checking out this episode of The New Abnormal. We're back every Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday.
If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend and keep the conversation going. This podcast is a Daily Beast production with production by Jesse Cannon and Seamus Calder.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.